during the lockdown stage of the pandemic. Like many, I started a podcast to keep busy and to create conversation with my artist friends within the industry. When in May, AAPA month, I decided to reach out to Lisa Lin to see if she would join me on my podcast. She agreed. That day, she shifted my entire paradigm. Lisa challenged me to use my platform to start deeper dialogue about AAPI empowerment, speaking to immigrants, and give voices to the marginalized communities. Lisa has inspired and reshaped Let's Talk With Yusai. And now, here's my open conversation with Lisa Lin. This is Yusai. Welcome to Let's Talk, a place for open conversations. In this episode of Let's Talk, I had the opportunity to speak to my hero, Lisa Lin, who has been an incredible inspiration for many Asian Americans in media. As an award-winning journalist and a powerful presence for Asian American community, Lisa Lin has always been an inspiration to me, as well as her broad audience. Her groundbreaking series on CNN, This Is Life, offers a sensitive and objective look at people, often marginalized, whose stories are rarely told with such empathy and non-judgment. She graciously took the time to discuss her journey and offer her optimistic perspective on where we stand at this pivotal moment in history. Often, when we meet our heroes, they fail to meet our expectations. But Lisa exceeded everything I have ever imagined. She's generous, warm, and articulate. This conversation was completely insightful about the champion she has become for Asian Americans and for the marginalized across the country. I first encountered Lisa on her program, Channel One News, where she was an early Asian American representation that I rarely found in media. We begin our conversation on the topic of Asian identity.
I remember watching this footage of you and Anderson Cooper at Channel One, and it was very incredible for me watching at that time, and I was very oblivious about Asian culture because I think we were young, we pushed that away from us. We're trying to blend in as much as we can. And as we get mature, we know that blending in doesn't solve any problems. You actually want to stand out.
I love that you have been full in celebration of Asian Pacific Heritage Month. There really is so much to celebrate. You know, the Asian community, so incredibly diverse. Wherever you are from in Asia or wherever your ancestors derive from, we're talking about the most rich histories and culture. And so I so appreciate you celebrating Asian culture, but I think it's also really important for us Asian Americans to never forget that while we may have been born in this country and feel as American as anyone else, American history hasn't always been kind to Asian people. Japanese Americans were the only ethnic group to ever be forced to live in internment camps throughout World War II. I mean, when you think about that now, it's like unfathomable. They're an ethnic group of people forced to live in internment camps. And the sad reality is that these people lost everything. They lost their businesses, their homes. And then when they were finally released, they just kind of went back into society and didn't raise their voices until much, much later. We can't do that. We have to be vocal. We have to be vocal when there are injustices being perpetrated on us and to all communities.
We have to band together to speak out against
those injustices and demand our seat at the table as Americans.
But you celebrate Asian culture so much. I know you're teaching your kids Mandarin as well. You know, do you ever feel this thing we call the Asian guilt, where you go, mom and daddy, grandpa and grandma worked their way so hard to come to this country, therefore I need to do the same, and I need to teach my next generation to follow through.
I certainly do put pressure on my kids. I grew up I really hated being Chinese. I really hated being Asian because I grew up in a community back in Sacramento, where there were
very few Asian people. I was made fun of a lot.
I was called Risa Ring on a daily basis because I didn't look like anyone who lived around me, right? But I never felt totally American.
Because I couldn't really relate to them, I was consistently reminded of my differences.
Our American values are ingrained in us, but yet we come from cultures that are incredibly storied and rich. And that helped me sort of get over that identity crisis. And now it's so important for me to expose my own kids to as much diversity as possible. I don't live currently in the most diverse part of Los Angeles, but because of that, I try intentionally to expose my kids to as much diversity as I can. My eldest daughter is 7 years old, and she knows about internment camp. She can recite passages from MLK's speeches. When I was talking to her about, you know, the history of racism in this country and police brutality, and to have the discussion that historically people have not been treated fairly. And I remember once talking to her about racism in this country. We were talking about MLK. She said, well, yellow people, our people, they haven't experienced anything like that, have they? I said to her, what Asian people in America have experienced
cannot compare to what
African Americans have experienced in this country. Like, there's absolutely no comparison. But you need to know that history has not been kind to Asians. And it's something that I think all Asians just always need to retain back of their mind, because to me, it's something that is a really grounding force in my life.
The story of Lisa's family echoes my own and is such a ubiquitous story for immigrants to the United States. So many immigrant families share a common thread of sacrifice and survival upon coming to America to pursue opportunity. My own family arrived from Taiwan to Terre Haute, Indiana. And due to the language barrier, the only jobs available were in kitchens. My father worked in my uncle's Chinese restaurant, even though he had left a successful career as a photographer.
I just find that we all have this common thread that as immigrants, you do what you have to do. Doesn't matter what your educational background is. It's about providing and about working really, really hard to provide for your family. When we start looking to each other, when we can find each other looking alike, we find similarity historically as well. And I remember watching an episode that you did pretty early on in This Is Life that you interview Chinese in America. And I remember, oh, I'm going to really relate to this story. Then I start watching and I didn't relate to any of it because they were the richest Asian people in the world. But however, there was a moment you were sharing with your aunt that you were talking about your
grandfather,
that he had NYU degree, MBA from University of Colorado, and yet he could not find work. And he opened a Chinese restaurant, the only one in that town.
Before the communists took over in China, a few Chinese able to pursue higher education in the U.S. So he had, an MBA, finally escaped from China to come to the United States in 1948. He could not be hired in California for a job in finance because he was Chinese. And so my grandmother, who had a music degree from Cambridge, ended up carrying her entire family on her back teaching piano until they could generate enough money to open the first Chinese restaurant in Folsom, California. And that's the story for so many Asian immigrants. In so many ways, Chinese restaurants, Asian restaurants have become as ubiquitous as McDonald's. Restaurants are a path forward in achieving the American dream. And even though many people who pursue that path, who are immigrants, don't have the pedigree that my grandfather did, it gave him and my grandmother an opportunity to achieve a little bit of the American dream. I don't know that they actually achieved it because they had a very, very hard life here, but they were able to have a decent living.
Lisa started her career at an early age and has had an incredibly impactful career in journalism. She has fearlessly pressed the boundaries to discuss topics often taboo in American culture, and especially from the point of view as an Asian American, where these discussions are even more rare. she has given voice to the LGBTQ community. These stories are always approached with compassion and objectivity.
I was lucky. I got hired to be a reporter for a show that was seen in schools across the country called Channel One News. It was a news broadcast. Anderson Cooper was one of my colleagues on that show. I didn't grow a lot of money. We didn't get an opportunity to travel much when I was a kid. This show sent me all over the world to cover stories. And most eye-opening experience I could have ever dreamt of. And it not only made me a smarter person, it made me a more well-rounded person and a more compassionate person. And that desire to want to communicate stories to a bigger audience, so many things that I saw, I recognize, like, I'm seeing these things for a reason. I felt it was incumbent upon me to try and communicate what I was seeing. And I feel as defiant as ever about that kind of storytelling, even though I don't do as much global storytelling. As a young person, I recognize the importance of being able to see things with my own eyes, but also sharing them. My show that I executive produced and host on CNN, This Is Life, is really not very different from the work that I was doing at Channel One 20 some years ago. I'm just aging myself. The goal is to try and allow people to better understand their fellow humans. As human beings, we have just as much right to our services in our country. We are just as much a global citizen as anyone else. But for some reason, some cultures, right, some races have been designated superior over others. We have this really unique opportunity. It's almost like the universe is telling us right now that we come together, right? We better hold each other's hand through this, or I'm afraid of what the consequences of all of this could be. And I do have hope that people are heeding all of this and will come together and stand up holding hands against injustices toward our fellow human.
You cover a lot of subjects that for me was fascinating because they were very atypical for Asian culture. You were touching on every subject matter that I think is what Asian mom said will never talk about. How do you find those stories and why do they fascinate you?
Well, one of the proudest moments in my entire career was when Exodus International, which was the largest ex-gay organization in the world. This was an organization that practiced conversion therapy and tried to convert people who thought they were gay to straight, all in the name of God, by the way. And I interviewed the former head of it. And I asked him, you know, if God is such a loving God, then do you think you will see gay Christians in heaven? And he couldn't really answer the question. He kind of stumbled and he just was a bit of at a loss for words. I mean, I'm surprised no one had ever asked him that question before. Maybe because he was doing it in front of a television audience. I don't know. But a couple of years later, he called me to tell me I'm shutting the whole organization down. If my God, the God that I believe in, is that loving God that I profess that he is, of course he's going to love and accept people, whoever they are, whatever their sexual orientation is. To this day, it truly was one of the proudest moments of my life. And in fact, so many of those people who worked for Exodus are some of the most incredible advocates now for gay rights. It's like, it's amazing because it's true. I mean, you know, especially those gay Christians, like if you're a God, if you believe in this God that loves you unconditionally, right, then he or she will love you no matter who you are. And if you are the perfect creation, right, of God's, then he will love you no matter who you are. I interviewed people who are gender fluid a couple of years ago for This Is Life. That was also one of my favorite episodes. And, you know, so one of the reasons why I love doing the kind of work that I do is I am forced to think about my own preconceived ideas. I interviewed a man named Steve, who spent his whole life living as a man, but when he was a little kid, would sneak into his mom's closet to wear her clothes and he always thought it was sinful behavior. And so he's actually a professor in the Bay Area and married with a child. His wife caught him wearing her clothes and wearing her makeup, and he said it was time to come out. His wife said to me, like, I love him for who he is and has still stayed with him and still loves him. I mean, I know it's hard for her, right? I know it's hard for her because immediately she's thinking, like, what does that mean for me? Is he going to leave me? But she loves him. Just wanted him to be happy in his own skin. Looked like the average Joe guy. And he put on a dress. He put on makeup. And I see this, almost this twinkle in his eye. Like, he felt beautiful. He felt like himself.
If you were able to go into a story without judgments, but when you exit that story, what do you take with you and how does that influence you? If you have no judgment, how do you grow from that?
So we all have judgment. You know, I try really, really hard to be as
non-judgmental.
But we are products of our environment. And so we've been predisposed to feelings about people or about a culture or what have you. It's that little opening, that little part of your brain that allows you to say, let me just think about this person's perspective. Let me just try for a few moments to just pause and take my own thoughts and judgments out of this and just listen. That is one of the most important skills that you could ever have. Hear someone's story, whether he or she is a Republican or a Democrat or whatever, you know, someone who couldn't be more different from you, you will start to understand him or her better. Inevitable. And so that's what I've always tried to do. I wish and hope that we can all start to see each other, not as someone who has different color skin. I mean, it's unavoidable. You have to recognize that, but to really recognize people for the humans that they are.
What you just said reminded me of this episode that where you immerse yourself into the story so much that you became physically naked. So share that with people because I cannot do justice. It was so incredible.
That was an episode that we did about sexual healing. You know, so many of us, particularly Asians, right? We hang ups about sex. We don't talk about it openly. It never communicated to us. It was never something that was conveyed to be pleasurable. It was always like you had to sort of talk about it privately. We live in such a puritanical culture. And as a result, I think that we start to have so many body images and we put up these blocks to the idea of being a free sexual being, right? In this process of doing this piece about sexual healing, I met this tantra expert who said, if you have any deficiencies in your sex life, right? You're not having sex with your partner. You may have had a traumatizing experience. If you have experienced rejection, if your parents were divorced, whatever it is, if you have any blockage to your sexuality, it affects every aspect of your life, your personal relationships, your job, because your sexuality is innate within you. And so I was profiling this young man who had cerebral palsy. You know what cerebral palsy does to your body, you know, you become severely disfigured. This young man went to a therapist to learn how to embrace himself, his body, his sexuality. And there was an exercise where he and the therapist become completely naked. They take off all their clothes and they look at their bodies and talk about all the things they like and what they don't like about their bodies. And I watched this young man who was totally naked with cerebral palsy. And as I watched him talk about the things that he likes about his body that he was proud of, I thought to myself, then why am I so ashamed of my own body? And it was not my intention when I woke up that morning to do what I did, but I said, I need to take off all my clothes right now and stand alongside you and stand right next to you because there is no reason why I should feel ashamed of my body because this is my body. This is the body that I was born with. And it was one of the most terrifying but liberating things that I have done. My cameraman and my sound man were like, okay.
Hey,
Lisa and I end our talk with a hope for the future. As we see the racial division exposed in this country and conflicts within government, Lisa sees a shift at the grassroots level and stresses the importance of unity and dignity of all people.
You have been such a resounding voice as activism for that throughout your entire career. How do you see that we're going to get through this?
The seeds of racism that have been sown throughout this crisis for Asian people, but for communities of color, particularly the African-American community, these systematic injustices are being magnified. And what we've seen has been horrifying. But what I keep thinking about is how these kinds of incidences, excessive force by law enforcement, these things have been happening for generations. It's just now people are empowered with cell phone video to be able to expose it to the world. There's so much tension in the air, right? There's so much vitriol. There's so much hostility. And the sad thing about all of this is that we're so lacking in leadership. I think right now we as a culture are just so hungry for leadership and for people to inspire us to do better and to be better. We're seeing so much of the hostility stemming from the highest levels of government and almost giving license to attacks and abuse. Yes, I've had an incredibly heavy heart, but my hope is that something tangible comes from this. On the one hand, while I have been so aghast and heartsick and appalled by so many of the videos of police brutality, I've also seen this overwhelming outpouring of support from people of all different ethnicities, advocating for people of color, advocating for change. And that is giving me hope. You know, I'm looking at this time right now, and this is a defining moment. It may be the most defining moment, certainly of this generation. And we're going to think back on this time. We're going to think about like what the role that we played, right? Whether we spoke out for justice and for the things that are right, or if we kind of crawled away into the corner. We're going to remember this time, and we're going to tell this story to our kids and to younger generations. And they're going to ask us, well, where did you come down on this? And I know that I don't want to say, well, I didn't say anything. I didn't do anything. I know that for my own kids, I want to be able to look them in the eyes and say to them, I stood for my fellow humans.
Thank you so much to Lisa for the amazing dialogue and for continuing the work of spotlighting diversity and inclusion for communities often marginalized. Let's Talk is a production of 88 Faces. Our director, Luis Jaime. Writer, editor, and producer, Trevor Sorengen.